Hi, everyone, and welcome to Futures and Languages, a podcast showcasing stories from UCF's Modern Languages and Literatures Department alumni. I'm your host, Christina Torres, and today we'll be talking with Dr. Tyler Fisher, who graduated from multiple programs, including English in fall of 2002 from the Honors College and Spanish in spring of 2003 in Honors in the Major. He also studied at Oxford as a Rhodes Scholar, completing his MPhil in European Literature with a Spanish focus and a DPhil in Medieval and Modern Languages. He also completed a postdoc at Oxford with an honorary MA. So lots of cool things that you've been up to since your graduation, and thank you so much for joining us today, Tyler.
Yeah, thanks very much, Christina.
Wonderful. So let's go ahead and get started. I know that you have a lot of stories to share with our listeners. We'll start with a general question. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and maybe where you're from?
Sure. Well, I grew up, I was born and raised in Fort Myers, Florida. And when it came time to choose a university, at that time, we got lots of physical pamphlets in the mailbox. And I was looking at all these various pamphlets. Financially, I thought, well, I might want to stick within the state of Florida. So I did a brief tour of various campuses in Florida. And honestly, UCF was the only campus where I saw students reading. There were students reading around the reflecting pond. And I thought, well, that's a good sign. Whereas by contrast, when I visited FSU, the tour guides and the advisors that were speaking to the prospective students, they only talked about football. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, look at me. Do I look like I might be a prospective football player?
And I feel the same way, honestly. I was like, I don't. Yep. Mm-hmm.
So I was very happy to enroll at UCF. But when I came to UCF, I didn't yet know what I wanted to major in. And I also felt some reluctance to answer people, oh, I'm undeclared, I'm undecided, I don't know what I want to major in. Because at that point in your life, everyone's asking you, what are you going to major in? What are you going to do? Mm-hmm. So I knew that I liked words. I loved writing. I worked as a tour guide at the Edison and Ford Estates in the summers of high school. Mm. So I was interested in how ideas are conveyed through words.
Okay.
And I thought, well, I'll just sign up for a general communications degree. But I didn't stick with it long because in my first semester, I had a very inspiring English professor who is still here teaching at UCF. Mm-hmm. If you have a chance to take a course with Dr. Barry Maurer, he's one of those professors that always leaves you after a lecture, after a discussion, you see the world in fresh ways. Mm. He's a real mind-changing professor. Mm. And he changed my mind about what the English BA could be. I had some general idea that majoring in English would involve reading and writing a lot and then eventually hoping that people would read what you wrote. But Barry Maurer allowed me to see that research in English could be very diverse, very exciting, very cutting edge. Mm. So I gladly signed up for an English BA. And then after my freshman year, I was able to study abroad. My first time overseas, I studied in Spain for a month, Spanish language, and then did a UCF chamber music study in France. And I combined those two back to back because traveling over the Atlantic is not the cheapest. Mm-hmm. And I had a scholarship from the Honors College that allowed me to do that. Well, that allowed me to, I really fell in love with Spanish. So I came back for my sophomore year and declared a second major in Spanish.
That sounds like a really important foundational experience in your academic trajectory was your studying abroad. Could you tell us a little bit more about your experiences in Spain that stood out to you?
Certainly. Well, like most Florida students, and I think this is still the case, that if a student aspires to go on to university, the student has to have at least two high school years of a foreign language. Mm-hmm. And at my high school, Spanish was the only option. Mm-hmm. So I dutifully did my 2 years of Spanish. In retrospect, I know that it wasn't taught particularly well. I kid you not, the teacher would actually have us stand beside our desk and recite búfalo, búfalo, búfalo.
Wow.
Árboles, árboles, árboles. And that was supposed to improve our pronunciation of the palabras esdrújulas.
Okay.
I'm not sure it helped. It certainly didn't leave me with any level of comfortability in having a conversation with a Spanish speaker.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, I'm embarrassed to say that I've done these 2 years of high school Spanish. And so I started taking at least one Spanish course when I arrived at UCF every semester, hoping to get better or at least maintain my level of Spanish. But then studying abroad with that immersion in Spanish, not only did it awaken my a genuine love of the language, but all of the contextual clues that are reinforcing the language learning was so important. Even that first day that I arrived in Spain, and I arrived with a lot of ignorance. Now, we didn't have smartphones at the time. I did have some access to internet. I actually sent my first email ever from the UCF computer lab. That was in fall of 99. So we're talking last century, last millennium. But I hadn't really bothered to make the extra effort to look up a lot of information about Spain before I arrived, or I should have read some more books about Spain before I arrived, because I had these crazy misconceptions that I would be eating something like Mexican food and it would be very spicy, which it's not in Spain. And I also thought that the landscape would look something like the Mexican desert. So these were not some places in Andalusia do, I suppose, but I was studying abroad in Sevilla and the climate, the trees and plants and the atmosphere, the humidity, it was like my hometown of Fort Myers. But the buildings showed a sense of history, traces of history that went back to the Phoenicians. And you could see little elements of Roman architecture and Visigothic architecture moving on through the Arabs and right up through the Renaissance and into the present day. So it had this strange and wonderful tension of feeling like home, but also like feeling something much more profound and different. So when I arrived in Spain, I was pretty jet lagged from that first overseas trip.
Oh gosh, yeah. Jet lag is no joke.
I had a host family. It was really just a host who had two university age sons of her own. And as I groggily in my jet lagged state came into the kitchen after a long nap, she was there ready to talk. And it was glorious being immersed in Spanish and suddenly having this hostess of the host family who was wanting to talk my ear off, and not just about anything. She had seen a city pigeon. She had seen a paloma with an injured wing. And this paloma was in the courtyard of the apartment building. And it was wobbling around with its injured wing. And she started to talk to me about the paloma for about an hour. And it was all these hypotheticals. What will the paloma do? What will the other palomas think? And will it be able to survive? And will it call out for help from its paloma family? And I thought, this is great. I'm getting immersive practice with these complicated conditional clauses. And it also, it captured my imagination because I thought, well, perhaps some of your listeners have the same experience. In high school and in my freshman year of university, I think perhaps especially at that time, there was a kind of mood of play it cool. Don't show interest. Don't show emotion. And I thought, here's this Spanish woman who is showing inordinate amount of interest in this pigeon with a broken wing. And she's giving me all this vocabulary and these grammatical structures. I like to say that it really gave me the first taste of an international imagination. And it was that international imagination that I brought back with me, part of what inspired my pursuit of a Spanish BA.
Yeah, it sounds like really what you're describing is an awakening, right? Just this beginning of what was to come next. You said you also went to France. Could you share with our listeners a little bit more about your experiences in France?
Yes, that was a much briefer study abroad. I went from Spain directly to France. Denise Armand Galenby, a very accomplished pianist, was a piano professor at UCF at the time. And she had her own, she had a trio for her chamber music. And she would take students for just 10 days in the summers to the Moulin d'Andet in Normandy. It was a very remote cultural musical center built around a 16th century water mill on the River Seine. And it was really just 10 days of nothing but learning chamber music, practicing, getting ready for the recital at the end of the 10 days. So even though it was brief, 10 days felt like something more like 3 weeks because it was so intensive.
And for our listeners who might be curious, what instrument do you play?
So I play the piano.
The piano. Okay. So you play piano.
I thought I might do a piano minor at UCF. In fact, that's why I was studying with Denise Armand Galenby. But I found that I was not able to perform by memory. And that was one of the requirements of the grades. In fact, it was a major portion of one's grade. But I would get up there for the every semester. There was a kind of end of semester examination, but it was on stage with all the other students present. And I would get halfway through my classical piece and completely freeze up every time. So I had to give up the piano minor.
Gotcha. But what a cool talent to have. I've always been very impressed by pianists. Like, you have to be so coordinated to do all that with both hands. I clap my hands to, you know, folks with that talent.
Well, thank you. I'm not anywhere near the level that I was at that time at UCF, because when I was in England for 15 years, I didn't have a piano available to practice on. Mm. So 15 years without regular practice, you get very, very rusty.
Gotcha.
But I still enjoy playing for recreational purposes, and I fill in as a substitute pianist at my church. So it's fun.
Awesome. So you get the chance to use your skills. That's great to hear. Well, thank you for walking us through these major experiences for you in your undergrad. I understand that you also did an honors thesis in your undergrad. Could you share a little bit with our listeners about maybe what that was like and some takeaways from that?
Certainly. Well, at the time, and maybe it's still the case, I should look at the demographics, but when I was majoring in Spanish at UCF, there were very few non-native speakers doing the major. So when I got up into the intermediate and upper level Spanish literature, Latin American literature courses, advanced grammar, and so on, those of us who were non-native speakers were clearly the minority. And it was intimidating. I really had something of an imposter syndrome. I remember going to one of my professor's office hours. This was Dr. Alberto Villanueva, who was a longtime professor at UCF, and he's now retired to Spain. But I had hit a plateau, and I think as language learners, this is a very familiar experience. You're increasing your ability, you're learning more vocabulary, and suddenly you seem to be making no progress for weeks or months. And I went to my professor's office and I confessed to him. I said, you know, Dr. Villanueva, I only understand about 70% of what you say in class. And his reaction was so encouraging because he said, you understand 70%? That's wonderful. You're going to build on that. And soon you'll be understanding 80% and 90%. And I think it picked me up at a time when I was feeling like this is going nowhere. Mm. So it was very encouraging to hear that. It was also in Dr. Villanueva's class. It was modern Latin American literature. And the textbook anthology had us read some poetry by José Martí. Mm. And it was poetry that Martí had written while he was in exile in New York City. He was in exile from Cuba because Martí was something like the Cuban George Washington. Mm. He was fighting for independence from Spain, for Cuba. So he was in exile, but that meant that he was separated from his wife and his infant son. His son was only about 2 years old at the time. And Martí wrote this entire collection of poems called Ismaelillo, this collection where he's imagining his son, imagining reuniting with his son. Mm. And it was the first poetry in any language that moved me to tears.
Okay.
And I thought, this is powerful stuff. Mm-hmm. And I want to find a way to convey this experience to friends and family who can't read Spanish. Mm. So this was just getting my toe wet as a translator, just trying to translate some of those poems from Ismaelillo. And then it was Ismaelillo that became the focus of my honors in the major thesis, because I decided to translate the whole book of poems into English and then write a critical introduction to the book and to the task of translating it.
What a wonderful project to be involved in. That sounds so exciting, but please continue.
One of the first poems by Martí that I read from that collection was called Mi Caballero. I'll recite just a little bit of it and then give you my English version. It's important to hear the rhythms and the rhymes in the Spanish. But Martí wrote, Por las mañanas, mi pequeñuelo me despertaba con un gran beso, puesto arcajadas sobre mi pecho, bridas forjaba con mis cabellos, ebrio él de gozo yo ebrio, pero qué suaves espuelas, los dos pies pequeños. I think I may have changed a few words there, but that's the general poem. So I rendered it in English as, In mornings past, my little one would waken me with one big kiss, astride my chest with bridal reins forged from my hair, both drunk with joy, a groggy pair. My pint-sized knight would spur me on, but what soft spurs his two fresh feet, and how he laughed, my buckaroo. Then I would kiss his two small feet, two feet that fit in just one kiss.
So beautiful. Thank you for sharing that with our listeners.
So that was my honors undergraduate thesis, and it really was a capstone to my Spanish major at UCF.
That's wonderful. So I know that you've been up to a lot since graduating from UCF. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe you were the first Rhodes Scholar from UCF. Is that
That's correct. So I'm the first and only Rhodes Scholar from UCF. Okay. But as I'm fond of saying, part of the reason that I'm here at UCF now is so that I won't be the only one for much longer.
Okay.
A large part of my role, and we can talk about this at length later, mm-hmm. but a large part of my role here at UCF is coaching applicants who are aspiring to the Rhodes Scholarship, the Marshall Scholarship, Fulbright, Gates Cambridge, Mitchell, very competitive international scholarships.
For our listeners who are maybe not familiar with the Rhodes Scholarship, could you maybe share with them what the scholarship is and who might be interested in applying for it?
Certainly. Well, the Rhodes Scholarship is the oldest international scholarship. Cecil Rhodes is a problematic historical figure. He was a major colonialist in British Africa, and he did some amazing infrastructural feats, like he connected Cairo to South Africa by railroad for the first time. He had vast diamond mining operations with the De Beers Company, and he made one of the largest fortunes of his day. Where he's less problematic, perhaps, was in his very positive vision of promoting world peace and international understanding by setting up an international scholarship. This was a completely new idea at the time. Today we think of scholarships, and of course you're going to get a study abroad scholarship or something like that, but this was unheard of. And Rhodes's idea was that he could bring students to the University of Oxford from all the former British colonies, the British Commonwealth countries, plus Germany. He threw Germany into the mix, because when Rhodes set this up in the late 19th century, and when he finally died in 1901, Germany was clearly a rising world power. So Rhodes's idea was bring these influential students and these very promising future leaders together to pursue their degrees at University of Oxford. They'll get to know one another. They'll go on to be leaders in their home countries, and the world will understand cross borders in a much more productive way. Mm. So that was Rhodes's positive vision. And the Rhodes Scholarship then is just over 120 years old now. Mm. It brings to Oxford just under 100 students globally, 31 from the United States, or 32 in some years from the United States. And students can study whatever they want at University of Oxford. There's no limit on what they can study. They can even choose to do a second BA, or they can go right into their doctorate if they're ready to do that at a research level. And they can spend 2 or 3 years in Oxford that are fully funded by the Rhodes Trust. So the money that Rhodes left was developed into a productive trust that continues to fund those international scholarships.
What a special thing to be involved in that very small group, because worldwide, like, what did you say, 100 and so students from around the world coming into Oxford. What were your interactions like with the other Rhodes Scholars while you were at Oxford?
Well, they were very inspiring. They were also very intimidating. I mentioned being in Spanish courses with mostly native speakers and feeling out of my depth. I also felt a really sharp imposter syndrome when I went. In Oxford speak, they say, you go up to Oxford. When I went up to Oxford, and they also talk about being sent down from Oxford, which is the equivalent of being expelled. I was convinced that I would probably be sent down in a matter of weeks upon my arrival, because I thought, here I am going over with this small group of very accomplished students, most of whom were from the Ivy League universities. Mm. And then the rest were mostly from what we call near Ivies, Stanford, Chicago, Vanderbilt, these kind of really well-established universities. And I'm thinking, UCF was great. I had wonderful mentors, but I'm thinking to myself, UCF is only, it had just turned 40 years old. It hadn't developed as a university in the way that some of these that are 200, 300 years old had been able to do. So I really felt like my tutors in Oxford, that's what they call the professors, mm-hmm. that my tutors would see that I wasn't prepared and I might need to just leave. But as it turned out, I had a very, very encouraging supervisor. He was the supervisor for my master's and eventually for my doctorate. Mm. His name was Colin P. Thompson, and he was a world expert on the Spanish mystic poets, Fray Luis de León, San Juan de la Cruz, these poets of the 16th century, Santa Teresa. Mm. And he knew that I was out of my depth. He knew that I hadn't had the kind of preparation that one of his undergraduates from Oxford moving on to the master's would have. So he told me, I'm going to treat you like an advanced undergraduate for this first semester. They call them terms in Oxford, for this first term. So for Michaelmas term, as the fall term is called, I'm going to treat you as an advanced undergraduate, I'm going to give you the Oxford tutorial experience, which basically means writing an essay every week or two, bringing it to the professor, and having the professor tear it apart and tell you what you could have done better. Mm-hmm. And then you go away and you write another essay about something different. And eventually, by the end of this, you have a highly polished portfolio of essays, and that's what you're graded on. Mm-hmm. So that allowed me to get up to speed, and I was able to successfully complete the master's. In fact, and I don't say this to brag, but I was able to get the top grade in my year for the master's in European literature. Mm-hmm. And then Oxford was practically asked me to stay on for the doctorate. So I was able to do that with Dr. Thompson as well.
Wow. What a lovely example of how one supervisor, one mentor can really make a huge difference in your overall experience here.
I think we're seeing a recurring pattern here now. Dr. Barry Maurer mm-hmm. opened my eyes to what the English BA could be. Dr. Villanueva intervened at a time when I was feeling very discouraged about my Spanish major. Mm-hmm. And then Dr. Colin Thompson allowed me to see that I could thrive in the Oxford context.
Mm-hmm. I always share with my undergrad students that all of us get to certain parts of our career because of mentorship, right? And it's such an important thing. And I encourage them to seek out mentorship too. And we're there, you know, as faculty to provide them assistance. I think sometimes folks are a little bit shy about asking for help, mm-hmm. but I always encourage them, hey, like, I mean, I would not be here if it weren't for Dr. Janet Coy. In my undergrad, who sat me down and explained, here's how you use a database search. Like, here's how you do. I walked in my first lit review paper. She's like, oh yeah, we're going to write like a 12-page lit review paper. And I'm like, what is a lit review paper in undergrad, right? So she sat me down. She did all of that with me. And I would not be here if it weren't for her. So it seems like we all have these big mentorship stories. And I think it's great and encouraging for our students to hear, because I know I've struggled with feelings of like, wait, am I out of my depth? Exactly what you were saying. Am I out of my depth here? And there's always been some form of supportive mentor to really prop me up in that process too. Thank you for sharing that with our listeners. Now, you've been up to a lot since Oxford too, and your return to UCF. Can you tell us a bit about your job here at UCF?
Certainly. Mm-hmm. Well, I said a moment ago that I thought I might last a few weeks at Oxford before being sent down. As things transpired, I ended up staying for 15 years. Mm. And for many of those years, I continued to teach part-time at Oxford, even after my postdoc, and also was teaching for the University of London full-time. Mm. The last 4 years of my time in the UK were at UCL, University College London. Mm. UCF had a very influential 26-year presidency. President John C. Hitt was the president at UCF when I was an undergraduate. And at this rather young institution of UCF, those 26 years of John Hitt's presidency really shaped what UCF is today. And President Hitt had hinted, and sometimes more than hinted, over the years that I was in the UK, asking if I would be interested in coming back to UCF for a faculty position. When I was here, for instance, at UCF's 50th anniversary, and at that time, President Hitt said, well, you know, wouldn't you come back for something that we arranged for you here at UCF? But it felt too early. I thought, I still want to see what I can accomplish internationally, and then maybe I'll think about it. Mm. Well, in 2016, perhaps it was, well, Brexit had just happened. And although philosophically and politically, I could argue both sides of the Brexit issue, in practical terms, it really hammered us in modern languages in the UK for a number of reasons, but the most apparent was that we relied on our exchange partners, European universities, to do all of the language exchanges that are required as a modern languages degree in England. So that was very difficult. We lost a lot of our exchange students from the continent. Brexit just turned us patas arriba mm-hmm. in the modern languages world. Mm-hmm. So after that, I was much more ready to think about returning to the U.S. And President Hitt's offer was still good, fortunately. And in fact, he approached me with a slightly enhanced offer in terms of thinking about how I could do a faculty position here and also focus a lot of my energies on advising students for these major scholarships. Hmm. So that's what I came back for in August of 2018. And to explain briefly what my role is, my academic home is in the Department of Modern Languages and Literatures. That's where my research is focused. And then in terms of my teaching and service or my advising, those pertain to the Burnet Honors College. So that gives me a lot of freedom and flexibility to serve students in the way that I see best. And it allows me to teach a couple of really exciting seminars for the Honors College. In the fall, I teach a seminar called Windows to the World, and we focus on creativity from an interdisciplinary and cross-cultural angles. Then in the spring, I teach the same, well, the seminar has the same name, but it's very different. Windows to the World with a narrative focus. So similarly, we look at narrative as the central theme from all kinds of different interdisciplinary angles, and we think about what narrative has meant across time and across cultures.
That sounds really cool. And so what would a quote-unquote typical day for you look like here in your job at the university?
Ooh, that's hard to define. You're right. let's say we'll take a typical Tuesday when I do have one of my honors seminars taking place. So, and Tuesdays, currently, that's my office hours day. So I would tend to fill much of that day with advising sessions with students who are preparing for scholarships. And I like to do those in groups of two or three, because then the students are able to proofread one another's work. I might be able to give advice that I don't have to repeat three times if they're all here. And they're getting it in different ways. So it's more of a discussion than just a top-down advice session. And then I often meet with colleagues who are working on translation as well, translation of poetry in particular, and then teach my class at three. I'm one of those professors who likes to stay after the class because students often have questions that they weren't willing to raise in front of the group. But we have some good discussions that carry on after the seminar.
I understand you have some busier seasons, for example, when the Fulbright applications are rolling in. I know that you serve on the Fulbright committee. Could you, again, summarize for our listeners what types of scholarships you are helping students apply for?
Certainly. So my role, as I was describing it earlier, is a little bit complicated because I work, or I should say, I supplement the work of UCF's Office of Prestigious Awards. Mm-hmm. And that office is housed in the Honors College, but it's open to any student from UCF. You don't have to be an honors student to get help from the Office of Prestigious Awards. Mm-hmm. In fact, I was just looking at our list of current Fulbright semifinalists. We have a record-breaking year right now with 22 semifinalists.
So exciting.
And I don't know the exact number, but many of those 22 were not honors students. So these are awards that are attainable, and you can get help from the, you can get support from the Office of Prestigious Awards without necessarily being a student in the Honors College. But my own sort of portfolio of scholarships. So I supplement the work of the Office of Prestigious Awards, which has a director, a very excellent director, Morgan Bauer. Mm-hmm. But I actually answer directly to the dean of the Honors College. So that's kind of the way my complicated role works. Mm-hmm. It means that I have a loosely defined portfolio of scholarships that I focus on. And those are naturally the major British awards. So the Rhodes Scholarship, Marshall Scholarship, Gates Cambridge, Mitchell, which is a scholarship for Ireland or Northern Ireland. Same idea. It's an all-expense-paid master's scholarship. And I may be forgetting one on that list. Oh, and then Fulbright, because it's international scholarship, I focus on coaching students for that, especially if they're going to a Spanish-speaking destination or Europe, generally speaking, or the UK. And then the oddball in the group is one that just wrapped up yesterday. So the Truman Scholarship is one that students can apply for in their junior year. In fact, they have to apply in their junior year. And it's specifically for public service, broadly defined. But it's not an international scholarship. You would stay within the U.S., but it's a lot of money for graduate school preparing for a career in public service. Mm-hmm. And I think the only reason that I'm working on Truman is because I was an unsuccessful Truman applicant. And what's ironic is at the time, the Honors College thought that that would be the scholarship that I had the best chance for. And in the end, I didn't even get invited to interview. Mm-hmm. So I think it just illustrates that there's always a bit of a gamble. You never know, as a candidate, you don't know what kind of people you're going up against in a given cycle. There's a lot of things out of your control, even if you prepare the best application you can. The wonderful thing is that when I'm working with students on scholarships, they know, and I certainly know, that all of the effort they put into those applications is not wasted. Mm-hmm. They can readily recycle, they can translate it directly into another application, or more loosely, more abstractly, they can take that preparation, that critical thinking, that self-reflection, and that practice expressing oneself in very formal application-style prose, and they can use that in any number of avenues as they go forward.
I like that you said that the effort isn't wasted. That's something that I think sometimes folks are, I feel talking to undergrads, they can be hesitant about applying. They're like, will I get a chance to get in? I'm like, just applying is free. Apply, you know, like, try. And you don't know what'll happen, but at least trying. And then just like you said, you can always use your materials for other avenues too, and to not be discouraged. I mean, if you didn't get the scholarship that you might have thought you got, you can end up with a Rhodes Scholarship like you did.
I could give you a long list of scholarships that I was unsuccessful applying for. So,
and you didn't let that stop you, right?
Right. I had, again, to name a very excellent mentor that I had throughout that process, Dr. Jayashree Shivamogi, who goes by Dr. J. She's now retired, but she was my mentor. Even though her field is physics, she was shepherding me through that process of applying for these international scholarships.
Thank you for summarizing what you do in a quote typical day here and your role here at UCF and the journey that brought you here. We do have a new segment this season called Ask Our Alumni. So today we have a question from Miley, who wants to ask about translation. Are you ready to answer Miley's question?
All right. Translation is my thing.
Picked it just for you. So here we go.
If any, what translation or interpretation skills do you think are overlooked in your field?
Well, that's a very good question, Miley. I think, and this is something of a hobby horse of mine, but I do wish that modern translation of poetry would pay more attention to form. If you look back at the great American translators of the 19th century, let's take Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, for example, he would imitate so closely the form of the poem that he was translating. And in his own right, Longfellow was a master of form in English. And you would read this poem and think, if you didn't know better, you would never know that it was from a different language. And I think that's a large part of making the poem autonomous, making it stand alone in its own right as a poem in a new language, in English in this case. And form, I don't just mean meter. It can be any formal feature, from alliteration to rhyme to anaphora, just to be very, I wish that 21st century translators of poetry would be more attuned to those formal elements, because I think it makes for much better poetry, better results in the end.
Great. Thanks for answering our listener question for today. So we have one more question here as we're wrapping up our session. And that question is, what advice would you offer someone who is interested in studying Spanish? I understand you also studied a little French, but you focused on Spanish, or really any other language. What advice would you offer someone who is interested and maybe hasn't started the process yet?
So for someone that hasn't started the process yet, UCF offers such a wealth of beginning courses in everything from Korean to Haitian Creole to Sorani Kurdish, plus the regular Spanish, French, Italian beginning courses. I would dive right into that. And with almost without exception, these courses are taught entirely in the target language. So it's a deep dive at the beginning, but really exhilarating. And then early on, start taking advantage of the very international nature of Central Florida. Starting here at the UCF campus, we have UCF Global, which is a hub for our international students. And many of those international students are always looking for language partners with whom they can practice. So you can exchange target languages. You can learn from a student that is a native speaker of your target language. And beyond UCF, Orlando is a real mosaic of people from all over the world. So seek out little communities. I think one thing that really helped me when I was trying to learn Spanish as an undergraduate was finding local Hispanic cultural groups who are always welcoming. And even if you're not from that particular ethnic group, you can join them and you can practice. And most people are quite flattered that you have that level of interest in them and in their language. And that's one of the joys of language learning. Even if you learn just a few key phrases in a particular language, if you use them, you're using someone's heart language and you can really connect in ways that you never thought possible.
Thank you for sharing that answer. And it connects to the theme in the alumni podcast of getting started and the doors that language learning can open and how in some ways you don't really always know what those opportunities will be, but they present themselves after you go ahead and begin that language learning journey.
You may end up speaking about palomas with wounded wings, or translating poetry that makes you cry.
And what a wonderful thing to experience human emotion in that way in different languages. So once again, thank you so much, Dr. Tyler Fisher, for joining us today on our alumni podcast. It's been a treat having you featured in this season.
Thanks so much, Christina.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Futures in Languages. I'd like to give a shout out to Davideo Guy for our intro and outro music downloaded from freesound.org. I'm Christina Torres, and our featured guest today was Dr. Tyler Fisher. Tune in next time to hear more alumni stories from modern languages. For more information about Spanish, French, and other language programs in the Modern Languages Department, please visit our website at cah.ucf.edu/languages.